If you're thinking about taking a class or attending an art lecture, listen to this episode to hear tips to get the most out of that experience. Welcome to Art Ladders, The Creative Climb with Valerie Allen and Armin Merzman. This podcast is focused on interviews, features, and stories about art. It's for artists and art lovers. I'm Val. I'm the abstract artist in the group, joined by Armin, the realist. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our episode 35. This is Val here, and we're going to be joined by Armin in just a moment. The title of this episode are ways to get the most out of your art classes, workshops, lectures, online events, ways for artists who are seeking lifelong learning and beyond to take advantage of all these opportunities and get the most out of them. And it all came about through some discussions we've had about Sister Carita Kent. Sister Carita Kent was a nun and artist back in the 1960s. And she taught out in Los Angeles. She was right in that kind of the flower power ages of art. She was known by my favorites, Robert Rauschenberg, John Cage, Armin's favorites too. And she had a set of rules that she used, and I read them before my workshops, but I'm just going to go through the first three rules that helped her guide her classes. And the first rule was to find a place you trust and then try trusting it a while. So that place that you trust could be the art center where you're taking your classes. It could be the online sites that you're checking out or workshops that you might travel quite a ways to. And then the second rule, once you're there, the general duties of a student is to pull everything out of your teacher, pull everything out of your fellow students. And then the rule three would be the general rules for the teacher. The duties of the teacher is to pull everything out that they can from their students. So I'm going to ask Armin how this can guide our discussion now for the day. Hi, Armin.
Hello. How's everybody doing out there? Episode 35. Can't believe it, but here we are. And we're still full of ideas. So I hope you keep listening to us. This is an interesting subject. And I go both, you know, from my experience as a teacher and I go back to my experience as a student. And, you know, what I did as a student was a little bit different than some of the students that I were in my classes did.
Sure. So, well, how was that? Why was it so different?
Well, number one, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, but I'm kind of a competitive person.
Oh, I have seen glimmers of that.
Yeah. And that's just the way I'm hardwired. Doesn't, you know, it happens to be art. And I, you know, when I was playing racquetball, I was very competitive and it's just my nature. But art holds a deeper meaning to me than playing racquetball did or those kinds of things. It is all I've really known because I grew up through that with my dad. And I remember being in classes where you'd get 2 weeks for a painting and I would go home and start.
Right. That is different.
I did not think about it. I went home. If there was a class that ended at five, I'd go home. I'd stretch my canvases. At the time, we all stretched our own canvases because the teacher believed that it makes it yours. If I was painting, I would probably use stretched canvases now. At that time, they weren't very good anyway. So I'd stretch my canvas. I'd prime my canvas. And then the next day I'd spend a lot of time sketching around. Obviously there was no Photoshop at that time. So I would do thumbnail sketches and get ideas together. Those ideas came not unlike the photo montage I do now. I would put something in there that doesn't relate to something and let it kind of build. But I would actually frame my pieces, every one of them, for a critique. Because that one stood out a little bit more than the others. And that time it was just this thin board that I would paint the lightest area of the painting and then a floater to darken it in there. But I really want the best representation. I wanted to come off as better than all the other students in the class. Did I always? Of course not. You know, you might have a framed piece and the other person might have this, you know, badly stretched piece and the image was so amazing. So I'm not saying that's the only way, but I always thought to myself, I want to start now. I need this 2 weeks. I can't even fathom doing a painting in 2 weeks now. So I think that goes back to my attitude,
right?
As a wannabe artist. I wanted it. I wanted it bad. I wanted to learn as much as I can. Didn't care about degrees at the time. I just wanted to learn from the great teachers I had.
Right. There's so many thoughts I can gather from those statements that would pertain to people taking art classes now. Number one, I just love the idea that you didn't procrastinate.
No.
You just went right in. I'm a little more of a procrastinator. You just went, dove right into those assignments. And then that act of presentation is very, very important. So good points on that. Some of my most memorable experiences, and I'm going to go kind of good and bad. I'm going to contrast and compare here. But a very, very wonderful instructor for me was an instructor that not only encouraged me. Now, I'm not talking about sugarcoating. I'm talking about giving me some positive feedback that I could build on. That kept me going. I'm motivated by good thoughts, and that helped. And this teacher also was a huge believer in interjecting art history throughout the class. So we weren't just looking at, you know, her work or the other students' work. We were also looking at the greats and learning from the greats. I thought that was a wonderful component. But then on the other side, and this is all college level I'm talking about, would be an instructor that basically do what you want, show up when you want, present when you want. I'm going to be over here doing my thing, artists, students. And if you need something from me, you come and ask me. Well, my thought was there, how do I even know what questions to ask? How would a student put in that situation know where to go?
Can you be a good student with a bad instructor?
You can. You can. You can get so mad at the instructor that you basically say to yourself, gosh darn it, I am doing this and I'm going to be good at it and they're not going to hold me back.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the situation that
I had an instructor once at a painting instructor. I saw him the first day of class, and then he had a student instructor do the rest of it. He would come in midterms and walk around. This works. This doesn't work. This works. I think you lose heart. I mean, as a student, you have to have in your mind, I want to say something to somebody. The students around you are already seeing you do it, but you want your instructor to say more than it doesn't work or it does work. And I think that type of instruction, I think is gone by the wayside. I think that's even different in colleges today. Of course, I wouldn't know because I don't go to college today, but I don't hear those kinds of nightmares. When I do, they're all, you know, instructors of the 60s and stuff like that.
And I'm showing my age, but the 70s and 80s were kind of that style. It was basically a world of abstraction, which I'm from, love that. But in that same experience, I had a team of teachers, and now we're talking about the community, but in the printmaking arena, it's similar to the ceramics arena in that it takes a community to build a department like that, mainly because we're all reliant on the same equipment. So in that particular class, not only did I have one professor, but there were two other professors. And so we would have a very well-rounded look at everything. And at every single critique, all three professors would show up. That's amazing.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen that often.
No, that happened for me as well. At times. Obviously my dad was my first instructor.
Right.
And he taught, he was self-taught, but he was very good at it. And he was very insistent. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't let me lapse. He wouldn't let me draw cartoons. I got all kinds of stories about that, but mm-hmm. you've either heard him or I'll do him some other time. But he was a taskmaster, and I learned to love it because I instinctively felt he was right. Mm-hmm. If I wanted to be a cartoonist, maybe I should draw cartoons, but that's not what he wanted for me.
Right.
But more important, that's not what I wanted for me.
Right. That's amazing to have that at a young experience. Mm-hmm. I believe that starting third grade, actually starting right out of a preschool age group, mm-hmm. art starts to become important. And then around the third and fourth grade, and we've talked about it before in our episodes, that is monumental time to help a young artist get on their way by encouragement and by supplies.
Well, let's say you get a student for the first time, a brand new student. What would be your advice for them?
Okay. And just before I start on the answer to that and how we are kind of lamenting a couple of our instructors from long ago, I think now you mentioned that it doesn't happen as often, or we don't hear about that as often. I think the consumers are driving the market now.
Of course. Yeah, sure. If they're not learning anything, they're not coming back.
They're not coming back, and they're spreading the word. So mm-hmm. there's some ways to kind of advise people on different approaches. So, but on to the advice or the way I start a new student. Was that the question? I think it was.
Yes. Let's say you're teaching a class, a painting class, drawing class, or whatever, and you get a student that's really never painted or has drawn or any of it, although they're really excited about wanting to try.
Oh, yes.
What would be three pieces of advice you'd give that student?
Okay. So the three pieces of advice I would give them is, number one, just once you've committed to that class, ask your teacher questions, ask the fellow students' thoughts, but show up for class.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid. It might be a little bit intimidating, and you might show up to the very first class, and then the second class, you think, oh man, I don't know if I can walk through that door, or you might show up a little bit late. Those types of things. Once you commit and you've paid your money for a class, just hang in there. Just keep an open mind. When I'm new in a class or a workshop, if I'm taking it, I show up with a pad of sticky notes so that while the instructor is talking, I can be writing down random questions. So that's number one. Just show up, and show up on time is crucial. The majority of a class happens in the first 10 minutes. It sets the whole mood. That's usually when the PowerPoints are presented. It's usually when the questions are answered. So that's one word of advice. Number two, supplies. As a new student, you're not really sure about the supplies, and you're going to get a supply list from the instructor. Okay, that's great, but it's still a little bit vague. If you don't know about supplies, email that instructor, call that instructor. And the instructor, me, for example, might say a certain technical name of something. And you might say, like, an ebony pencil. Well, what's an ebony pencil, Val? Well, it's a designer pencil. It has the softness of a 6B. What's 6B mean? I mean, these are questions as a new student on just the supply list. Mm-hmm. So, and instructors love those kinds of phone calls, because you're going to save some money. You might already have a pencil that's going to work that's not that particular brand.
Yeah.
So that's number two. And number three is, again, once you are in class, absorb the material. Don't interrupt the material right when it's being presented, but keep your questions on the sticky notes. So mm-hmm. basically, number three is just listen as hard as you can.
Right.
How about you? Do you have three?
Yeah. You know, I'm not talking about college classes because I haven't done that in many years, mm-hmm. nor would I ever do that again. Mm-hmm. So the demographics in my class is people in middle age and mm-hmm. older than that. Mm-hmm.
The lifelong learners.
The first thing I say to them, have a place to make art.
Ah, good one.
Because yes. if you have to drag out, you know, your paper on the kitchen table, and maybe you have kids, grandkids, dogs, cats, everything can turn that over. Have a place where you can think. Have a place where you can meditate. Mm-hmm. Have a place where you can make art on your own terms. And the time, if you have 5 minutes, you're going to go in there. You don't have to get anything out. You'll work on a drawing for a while. And all of a sudden that turns into 10 minutes, 15, an hour.
That's right.
It's easy to do. So have a place where you can draw.
And you're talking about a place
or paint
that you can leave out. Nobody's going to bug it. And
I mean, if you live in a small house, then, you know, get a divider, you know, anything. I've always had a place to make art. I'm looking at 78 years old. I had my own little mm-hmm. niche, my own little drawing table in my room. And mm-hmm. my dad's studio, I had a part of that too. It was always my place. Maybe people call that a man cave. But that's not the same thing. No. That's a place where you watch football games and drink and talk about
really
stupid.
Or a lady
really
liar,
stupid,
I think they call the component.
Yeah,
but no, it's not that.
Or something.
It's not that.
But it is a place for you to think. And for me, my studios have always been a very important thing. Mm-hmm. I have a drawing studio and I have a computer studio. Mm-hmm. So that works really well. That's my first. And the second thing is, how much you put into it equals how good you get.
Right.
Unfortunately, not everybody has the time. And maybe some people don't really want to get that good. And that's a choice. You know, if you just do your bare minimum and you're loving it, you're having fun with it, I don't have a problem with mm-hmm. that. But at the same time, you know, that student might ask me, why am I not improving like, you know, some of these other people do, or so you want me to, or it's because you don't spend enough time on it. Mm-hmm. It's like me playing the guitar. You know, I like it. I don't want to get better. I don't go out there and practice scales. Once in a while, I throw out a couple of power chords to, you know, annoy you and the neighbors. And so that's that's why I do it. So you have to be dedicated to it. If you're not, You can have fun with it, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah, okay.
And not everybody's going to want to become a, you know, a master at their craft. You know, mm-hmm. some people just like it and I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But as a teacher, the ones that do put a lot of time in it, I can see them grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. You know, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And also be verbal, ask your teacher questions. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you don't understand sfumato. Now, it's one of the techniques I use. It's smoke like an Italian. It's soft edges, so it looks like it's blended into the background. And it's very much something that I'm a proponent of in drawing. And a lot of times people have a hard time. And if you're lucky, your teacher will demo. I can tell you this. When I went to school, none of those teachers demoed.
Same here.
Ever. I was wondering, can they do it? I mean, although most of my instructors were artists and I could see them doing it because
right,
they did great art,
right.
You know. But the I demo a lot, even on Zoom classes, which it's a different kind of thing. I enjoy the Zoom classes. I'm not about to drive all over the place for teaching anymore. And so it's worked out pretty good. And I get people from all over to take those Zoom classes. But the way you demo is a little bit different mm-hmm, on there. You, mm-hmm. you might demo via Photoshop. And I'm really good at using Photoshop to do demos. Mm-hmm. And like tonight, I have a live class and I will demo on a drawing I'm working on. Mm-hmm. I don't teach beginning drawing classes. So I'm always working along with the students.
Right.
And when I have something going on that I want to show them, say, hey, everybody, want to show you something. Here's the reason I'm doing this, mm-hmm. you know, and then I walk around and look at their work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that demo interaction is key to learning. Mm-hmm. You know, you can learn by listening, you can learn by reading about it, but actually seeing it, especially as artists are such visual people, mm-hmm. would be the demos. Now, I'm laughing because demos for an instructor can go south pretty quick.
Oh God, yeah.
And you're probably thinking, is this even, do I want to show that vulnerability to my students?
Yes.
Yes, you do.
Because you want to show them that it isn't magic.
Yes.
That sometimes it goes awry, you know, that nothing's perfect. And, you know, you're going to F up a few times in your, when you're doing demos. but, you know, I always tell them, all right, I messed this up. Don't do this. Or whatever I say, right?
Oh, yeah. I say that a lot. I'll say, now don't do what I'm doing right now.
Right.
You do it this way. Right. It's a great learning tool.
Don't you think it was hard to get into that mode? I was scared to death to demo.
It is hard to get in that mode. And you have to be a very, and I've learned this through the years of teaching, organization is so important.
Right.
And to have to, capture a successful demo presentation, you have to be exactly with your tools all out, ready to go. And
what do you think about, for instance, there's many, many different kinds of drawing techniques.
Yes.
I specialize in the long form drawing kind of technique. Right. So I demo in that thing. You know, there's people who do looser things and sketch that are just as wonderful and just as important.
Oh, yeah, very interesting.
And I'll try to demo that, but I tell them this isn't really the way I draw, but I can give you an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's helpful.
I will tell them that I'm not, you know, I'm not the master at this technique, but I can do it. I can fake it, I guess.
In this new world that we're in where online classes, which we both teach now, are becoming really advanced and very successful. I really enjoy, I tell my students that when I do plan a lesson for them, it's almost like producing a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'll go through a script with a PowerPoint and then the demos. It's very, for me, very enjoyable to plan a class online because I think of the visuals, I think of color, I think of the, you know, action. Mm-hmm. And that goes way, way back to when my dad had an 8mm movie camera.
Mm-hmm.
And since I was the oldest cousin, I was the one that would say, okay, everybody, this is a moving movie. We have to move.
Mm-hmm.
So grab your hands. Let's run around.
Well, that's how you're hardwired though. Anyway, that's how you are.
I am hardwired.
You know, you are
pretty animated.
Yes, you are. And you're out there and, you know, people have fun by just watching you.
I hope so. But we touched a little bit, not directly. I was talking about the printmaking instructors and how we were kind of a community and everybody. How do you feel about building your classes into a community? And how do you do that if you...
Well, I think if the people are long, you know, I teach classes that are indefinite, which means they go on, they go on, and they go on, they go on. And at some points, you're kind of just talking about things of their work, like their composition and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets to be a community where I sometimes feel as a teacher, if I'm a little harsh, and I'm not even harsh, I'm not a hard critiquer.
No,
believe
I've heard
me.
Your critiques.
No,
they are not.
No. But I might say something like, what if, and the rest of the group just jumps down my throat.
They're defending each other.
I mean, this is the what ifs are not that. The what ifs are so important that if you try it, it might work. It might not work. Right. Uh-huh. But if you don't try it, you're not giving it your all. Right. And so these what ifs are just conversation pieces. But, you know, this isn't you should. I don't do a you should.
Right, right. Yeah. And yeah, you'll the longer a class is together, like you're saying, the more committed they are to not only you, but also each other.
Yeah.
So it is a form of sticking up for each other. And I'm all for that.
Well, I've seen that in college.
Yeah.
Where pretty hardcore critiques. And the professor would just kind of tear somebody up. I mean, really tear somebody up and going out crying. And some student stands up for that. And the next student goes out crying next.
Right.
So that was a different time.
That was a different time. And It could still be that way on critiques and college level for all I know, but.
Well, there's a reason for it in college level too.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know, that's a big world. The art world
is professional.
The art world's big. Mm-hmm. If you can't deal with a critique, how are you going to make it in the art world?
That's true. You know? That's true. You have to have a tough skin. Mm-hmm. And I feel that the community in a class is so important because then it seems to lessen the fact that you might want to be absent that day. You feel committed to the rest of the students. And so you go, oh, you know what? I wasn't going to, but I am going to go because they're counting on me. We do count on everybody in the class to bring something to the discussion or some question that maybe we haven't thought about, or they're going to show us a new piece that we've never, ever seen before.
Yeah.
So the community binds the class together and encourages us all to show up, be on time, and to be participate. And you get so much out of that. So much.
Well, another thing that happens is that you learn from every student.
Oh,
because
yeah.
every student does it differently. And you say, I like the way this person does it. Uh-huh. I like the way this person does it. Mm-hmm. As a teacher, I learn from every student. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It might be something they ask me a question of something. I don't have the answer. And then I'll research that and give them the answer the next time.
That's right.
Or they might have a color they use and I say, well, yeah, that's a nice color. I think I'm going to use that as well. I'm going to steal that from you. Right?
Steal like an artist.
Yeah.
Love
so,
it.
So I don't think I would be as good of an artist if I didn't spend all these years teaching. I really don't think so.
Mm. Oh, I agree. I agree 100%. Mm-hmm. And for me as a teacher, it motivates my own work, not only from all the reasons you just said, but it gets me out of my, out of my head a little bit. I'm thinking about the good for the class. And while doing that, I'm gathering so much information for myself as I plan those lessons. Mm-hmm. I'm learning more about the art history component I bring to the class. Mm-hmm. It keeps me on my toes.
Right. And you're very good at that too. You know, you plan them like that and
it's refreshing. Really.
We also have a different world today. If you take a Zoom class and somebody mentions an artist that influenced them or an artist you just saw, I can find that artist right then and there and show the rest of the class, here's the artist that she's talking about, you know. So in that case, Zoom classes are more powerful. I guess in a regular classroom, you can do that now too. You have a screen. You
that's
have a
theater, right. The high-tech classrooms.
Know, so, yeah. But that's a real different way. You know, when we went to school and a professor said, you know, you should look at the work of Mondrian, and I'm like, okay, where do I find that? And then I go to the library and find Mondrian, right? And so we, you know, students today are very lucky that we have that tool for teaching today.
It really opens up a lot, doesn't it?
It really does.
When you think of all the different ideas and how with computer and with technology, we can instantly get to it. Mm-hmm. It's really, really exciting. Yeah. It really ups everybody's game.
I also advise my students that, and you know, some of them, you know, are a bit older in the sense of they never needed to use computers as much as I did in my job at the Midland Center for the Arts.
Yeah.
You have to learn the basics of computer.
Yeah.
You know, I know you don't like it. I know it's tough. And I know, but, you know, take a small class in it. You don't have to use Photoshop and all these kinds of things.
No, I don't use Photoshop.
Right. But
I mean, I would if I knew how to do it.
Right.
You have to teach
Well, you don't
sometime.
Need to.
I'll be your student.
Well, you have Canva and these other things that you use, right?
Yeah.
And they work fine, you know. I wouldn't teach, you know. Mm-hmm. Photoshop anyway, there are so many things. It's so huge that even after 20 years of it, I'm still finding things.
So much more to learn about that. Mm-hmm. So how about the questions? Is there any question that is too crazy to ask? I don't think there is. I've hesitated to ask questions before in certain situations. To find that, I thought to myself, why didn't you ask that question?
Well,
usually it comes out in the discussion, but there is no question too crazy to ask your teacher.
Oh, I think so.
You think there is a crazy question?
Are you married?
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, those kind of personal things.
Those kind of personal things. Okay.
You know.
Okay. Any art-related question too crazy?
No, but I don't really think so. Even I think some people don't ask questions because they're embarrassed because they think everybody in that class knows
already knows it.
And they really don't.
They don't.
You know? You know, questions about compositions and you know, perspective and all these things. People are very vague on perspective.
Yes.
You know, when do people really learn perspective? And, you know, I mean, I teach a small class on it and I have to, every time I teach it, I have to read about it. I know enough as an artist perspective that usually I don't have to mathematically put these things together. Mm-hmm. I can see these things. But I know that if I have to, I have that tool. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of those things that people hesitate to ask, or just, you know, so-and-so gets really dark. I can't do it. What am I doing wrong? You know, and I usually can do it. And a lot of it has to do with, you got to take your time. You're going too fast. And these kinds of things.
Right.
You know, you more want to get done with it than live with the moment. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, when I draw, I live in the moment. I don't think about time.
Yeah. You know? Yes. And those types of questions when the teacher's going or a lecture, my lectures are kind of like that. Extremely fast moving, extremely hard to catch everything because as artists, we're not only listening, but we're looking at things while we're, and the teacher will skim over something. Wait, what did you say? And you might be hesitant to say, what did you just say? What was that medium you just talked about? Go ahead and ask it because it's so important. It's hard to absorb it all at one time. And for that matter, repeating classes aren't a bad idea either.
Oh, no, not at all.
Yeah.
If you're going for a degree, then, you know, it's a waste of time.
Yeah. Well, you have to keep moving forward. Yeah.
But if you're taking classes and you get a lot out of it, well, does it hurt to have it again? You'll get more out of it.
You'll get even.
I know there's classes I took 3 or 4 times.
Right.
And finally, the teacher told me, you can't take this class anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm sick of seeing it.
But what that will do for you is, the first time you take the class, you don't even know what to ask. Mm-hmm. The second time, you know a little bit more. So your questions are definitely starting to be a little more on point and fruitful for you as an artist. So yeah, in a lecture, same way. You hear it one time, go back again, listen to it again. It doesn't hurt. Yeah. It keeps it going.
There's one thing I do that no instructor ever did that I had, and not many instructors I know do this, that if I walk around and somebody's doing something and they need help with it, I'll say, everybody come in and get up and watch what I'm doing, because those people will have that same problem sometimes.
That's right.
I don't just go to one person and draw on their, I don't draw on their stuff much anyway. I mean, I do a little bit, but you know, my philosophy is, you know, I'll show you, you get it out of yourself, you know, but that's my personal thing. Other people do it differently. But I always, sometimes I even let people make a mistake because I want people to learn from that mistake. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and that's been a little controversial sometimes, but you know, well, why didn't you tell me
that
earlier?
Why didn't you tell me that?
Because I want people to learn from this. I mean, nothing huge. I mean, if they're really going off base, I'll tell them. But you know, this is small things, you know.
Right. Well, that's how you learn.
Yeah.
In fact, one of the rules that I, Sister Karita talks about is there are no mistakes. Mm-hmm. And I highly believe that. You learn from everything. And so there are no mistakes. Your mistakes, my mistakes in my own personal artwork, usually push me well beyond to a wonderful painting. It happens over and over. So that now I kind of count on the mistakes to get me through these things.
That's what I was going to say. I don't recall any piece of art that didn't have mistakes. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there's a balance where I even leave a couple mistakes in there.
Yeah.
Just because then I tell everybody, it's another thing I tell everybody, Is there any perfectionists in the room? Half the room raises their hand. I'm saying, well, quit it.
Quit it. Well, quit
you
it. Know,
you're never going to get anywhere. So what I say to people, there's a point when you would feel you're done, but you still could do more. Stop already. Yeah. And that's, you know, a piece of art is just a chapter in your novel. And then you work from that and fix that in the next one. Mm-hmm. But don't sit there and noodle it to death, because that just takes time from your creative process. Mm-hmm.
It's discouraging on top of it. Mm-hmm. I'm a believer of setting it aside. I don't hesitate to go back to a work and go back into it. Yeah. But set it aside for a while, a couple of weeks. Yeah. Go back to it and then reevaluate.
Yeah, I've got a drawer full of pieces that I stopped on.
Or use them for collage. That's always.
Yeah.
Or don't throw it away.
Cold winter night, you ran out of wood.
That's right. That's so right.
You're burning your artwork at this point.
What sort of words that you keep to heart from past instruction that you've had? Put yourself in the student role. And something that maybe a mentor, and you have keeping that in your practice now, or even words that you keep in your practice now from a mentor.
Well, there was one thing said to me once, and the reason we're not mentioning these teachers, because there's too many to mention.
Oh, yes, you know, absolutely.
So, but when I was in a class, I was drawing a class, I was drawing real well. And it was our final assignment, and it wasn't in color pencil, which I absolutely don't use anymore. But I drew this very realistic drawing of these brushes in a paint glass with all the paint on it and all that.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, really realistic. And the teacher said to me, okay, Armin, we all know you can draw. So what's with this? This is conceptually boring.
Oh, that's
so what you're doing is you're trying to become an artist by technique alone, not by new concepts.
Oh,
and
that's
it pissed
heavy.
Me off.
Yeah.
For a while.
For a bit.
And so then I understood what that was saying. And I say to my students, art is creativity, and you have to balance the creative process, the concepts with the technique. They have to grow together.
Mm-hmm. That's very, very good words. Mm-hmm. I know that early on in my college days, and it was an intensive immersion into design work for a summer. It was a prerequisite that you had to complete. So we were in there 5 days a week, 8 hours a day for like 3 weeks. It was a summer class situation. And our instructor was an industrial design professor. And he was leading the fine art majors, the architects, everybody in that class. And I, at one point, asked him, what is one word of advice you could give students, us, that would keep us going with down this path? Because we were just at the beginning of these, the college years. And he said, I said, is it talent? Is it this? Is it that? Determination? Is it blah, blah, blah? He said, perseverance. Mm-hmm. Don't give up. Just persevere. It's not going to be easy. It's going to get rough. Just keep on keeping on.
That's, you know, and that's great advice.
It keeps me going even through a single painting.
Yeah.
Persevere, get through it. Love it.
You know, we all of us that make art know that piece of art go through ugly stages where, there's times I think, you know, all that stuff that I've done for 60 some years was an accident. I'm really crappy, you know. But the reality comes in and says, you know, work it out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's just sleeping on it, coming back to it with a fresh eye. Mm-hmm. But there's no shame in to giving up on a piece.
Oh, no, you mentioned that.
Yeah.
But don't give up too early either.
No. It's but I mean, line. When it becomes brutal.
Yeah.
And you hate what you're doing, then you might want to get out a new piece of paper.
Maybe start something fresh. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
But I usually keep those things because many times I've gone back into it and they work great. Mm-hmm. You know. So
do you have a current mentor that you bring? And this could be any artist, really. Is there somebody that you keep in your head when you're working? that you're, it's probably somebody from art history. I'm talking that level, the high level mentor, the person that's been the beacon.
I don't.
At the art history level.
I don't. You know, I mean, there's certain people like Van Gogh that I, when I first saw Van Gogh, I understood how you can feel with art, you know, I was about 11 years old. My dad had books on Van Gogh and I thought, Jesus, dude can't paint, you know? And so I saw my first live Van Gogh in Toledo at the art museum and it blew me across the room.
Oh yeah. You know?
And as you know, I'm influenced more by musicians.
Yes,
and
that's
words.
True. They're more your mentors.
Yeah, but because then I get into the technical part. There's, you know, I respect Mondrian because he basically invented abstraction from starting where Van Gogh left off and got to abstraction. And so there's different things about different people that I admire, but I don't have a, you know, a strong mentor that I look up to. I have bits and pieces. Many pieces that I admire. Oh gosh, you know, there's students I admire. There's fellow teachers that I admire, but I have to piece it together in little bits at a time that I like what this person is doing. I like what this person's doing. Mm-hmm. You know, Anselm Kiefer is one that comes to mind that I really like, but I don't want to do that like that, you know? So, for me, it isn't a single person, but a combination of people and music and words. And sometimes I'm my own inspiration of something I did 5 years ago.
Right.
But sometimes that doesn't work out too good because you don't think like you did 5 years
That's
ago.
That's true. That's true.
Does that answer your question?
It does.
I hope
and
I didn't.
I guess I'm referring this to a concept. I listened to a podcast called The Creative Pep Talk. Mm-hmm. Andy J. Pizza is the host, and he is a firm believer of the hero story and having heroes that you look toward and you study them. And so I equate mentor with hero.
Oh, there's a lot of those, but they're all in the political, social, critical, musical kind of things. Mm-hmm.
So maybe hero is a better word.
Yeah.
Because that's the word he uses. And then I started thinking that made sense to me. You know, like I'm looking at somebody like Diebenkorn or Rauschenberg, and his theory is to just absorb, read about them, look at their paintings. What is it about them? And I think what it is about those two artists in particular was they have variety in their work. Their style changes per series. And my work is like that. It changes. So one series might look this way. Another series might look that way.
Right.
And when I advise students who are entering jury shows, I say, now make sure everything's consistent. So this is a contradiction to that consistency. I want to work all over the place.
But even Rauschenberg and Diebenkorn, you could see their work. You know, no matter what they do, and to some extent,
so it's a little bit,
you know, there's a little bit of their signature,
yes,
you know, their composition and where they're working,
their
and
language,
all that
yeah.
kind of stuff. You know, and both artists are one of those that fit a little niche in my thinking.
Right.
I love both of those artists,
right?
But you know, am I influenced by Diebenkorn to do things like Diebenkorn? No.
But I think that hero advice, find your heroes. I think that's good advice for students. Definitely.
Yeah.
And it could be a mentor or a full-on history past person in the hero range or current. So excellent, excellent. Your instructors, I recommend following them on social media.
Oh, of course.
Follow their Instagrams, follow their Facebooks. You're going to see more of their work. You'll get to know more about them. And, you know, the checklist, have yourself a checklist of making sure you're ready to learn. Have your sticky notes handy, have your supplies handy. If you're going to a lecture, save the materials that they pass out. Email the instructors with questions. Instructors are very open to giving.
Yeah.
Anything we should add to that checklist?
Be passionate.
Be passionate.
You know, let art become a passion. Let it become them. You know, you wake up in the morning and say, I'm learning to be an artist, or I am an artist. It's a great thing to be.
Oh, I love that.
And I want to go out and paint. I want to go out and draw. Don't let that slip away. If passion for art slipped away, I don't think I'd do it.
No.
But I have the same passion now as I did when I was 17.
Right.
You know,
right.
Now that I'm in my 30s. I'm kidding,
oh,
guys.
Oh, gosh. I'm in a good place here. I'm younger than you. No. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, don't lose the passion. Have the passion. Do the work. You know, listen to your instructors, but they're not God. You know, no, they are not no. God. Every instructor has a different way of doing it.
Yeah.
And listen to, oh, that's the way this person does it. Oh, that's the way this person does it. That's the way that person does it. Mm-hmm. And don't listen to anybody that says never or always.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And so you folks out there may be thinking about in January, starting up a new class, joining a group, going to a lecture. Mm-hmm. We're kind of going into the holidays, slower times right now where classes are already in process. But think about January. Think about committing yourself to an art class, yep, or going to an art, yep, event and using some of these tools that we just gave you here.
Yep.
We'd love to hear about it. Love to hear about
it. And if you constantly find excuses not to work, maybe bowling would be your answer. Oh, no.
Don't go there, folks, please. Okay. Well, Armin, this has been fun.
It has been.
I'm ready to get passionate.
Yep.
And get out there.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
We'll see you guys next time around.
Golden Apple Residency is looking toward the future. All the participating artists are selected in advance, and it's wise to plan ahead for summer of 2024. The application process is very simple and straightforward, and there's no application fee. The main qualification is unwavering dedication to one's creative goals, and as such, seeking time and space to pursue those goals. Golden Apple accepts artists and writers with diverse interests, backgrounds, educations, and experience. One does not need to be a professional artist, but simply needs to have an overwhelming desire to continue to learn and grow through time, space, and experience, all of which Golden Apple provides. They honor and welcome artists and writers at every stage of their career. Shelley Stevens, artist and director, is happy to answer any questions and, with her guidance, help make residencies happen. Email Shelley at snstevens@goldenapplestudio.com. That's snstevens at goldenapplestudio.com. Thanks for sponsoring us, Shelley.
Thank you for listening. You can find our past and future episodes at anchor.fm, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Be sure to follow us on our Facebook page, Art Ladders, The Creative Climb, with Valerie Allen and Armin Mersman. Special thanks to our producer, Taylor Kramer of Cold Shower Media.
And check out our websites, ValerieAllenArt.com, ArminMersman.com. Stay creative, stay curious, and we'll see you next time.